Yiradamarang, hello and welcome to Speak My Language Disability, as we share stories of First Nations peoples who are engaging in their passions while also living with a disability. Throughout this series, you'll hear inspiring stories from leaders and advocates within the community who have successfully pursued their dreams in their chosen fields. In this episode, Kerry Lee Harding yarns to Paul Constable Calcott. Paul is a proud Wiradjuri artist who draws from his own lived experience to uplift First Nations artists living with disability. Through his art practice, Paul fosters resilience and connection, helping run an art group on the Sunshine Coast that provides a culturally safe and inclusive space for individuals to share stories, yarn, paint, and create art together. In 2024, Paul represented First Nations peoples on the world stage as a delegate at the United Nations headquarters in New York, where he presented artworks at the Conference of States Parties to the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, further advocating for inclusion and the power of creativity.
Hi, my name's Uncle Paul, and Dhirumadilya Badu Wiradjuri. I'm proud to be Wiradjuri, and I'm sitting here in my studio, which is a bit messy, but this is my happy place where I come to paint. This is my version of a men's shed. This is my studio.
I love your space and what it represents. I can see the Aboriginal flag flying high in the background on your wall. What's in that space, Paul?
I've got some huge tables that I paint on, some chairs, shelving. I've got just all the stuff I need to paint. Have some really great spaces here. We have some of the aunties and the elders come and we sit around that table, and we don't always get a lot of painting done. We do a lot of yarning, a lot of storytelling, and one of the aunties makes the most deadliest lemon myrtle cheesecake around. So we do that. So it's a really nice space. It's also known, it used to be our garage, but I thought painting and hanging out with the community was more important than housing a car. So we fixed it all up and then turned it into my happy space.
Lovely. I love the sound of that. You really had me at cheesecake, lemon myrtle cheesecake, brother. Now, let's talk about the role between art and well-being. What are your thoughts on that?
Art and well-being is just, I've seen it happen with people and I do it myself. It's a way of expressing yourself without judgment. It's telling your story in a way that you don't have to write it down. You do it in an expressive way. And I've seen people, especially with our mob sister, when they come in and paint, we're using symbols and storytelling styles that our ancestors have used for thousands and thousands of years. And when you start to sit down and do that, it connects you back with your culture. It connects you with your storytelling, but also creates this space where people come together and support each other and share our stories and sort of build that resilience. So to me, you know, when I paint, I mean, I contracted polio as a kid, so I couldn't get out and do a lot of the sports, but art and painting was my way of expressing myself and connecting. And so it's very important for the healing side of stuff with our community. Especially, I work with a few beautiful women from Stolen Generation, and I've seen the stories they tell. But when they paint these beautiful paintings that are about the barriers they've overcome and their resilience and the strength, it is so healing. It's healing for them, but it's healing for anyone that gets to look at it as well, because they can see this person is telling a story of absolute strength and resilience. And I just think that's amazing.
And you just mentioned there a little bit earlier about being a young child and having polio and practicing your art. Can you take us back to your time as a child and tell us about some of that art you created? And what was that like for you?
Look, I used to love to paint and draw, and my dad loved to paint. My dad loved colour. I remember once in our house, we sort of always born. We lived in a tin shack down on the banks of the Lane Cove River. And then we got a housing commission house, and we thought we were really flash to have this house with our own bedroom and everything else. And my dad was so proud, and my mum was a feisty little Irish woman, so they were really proud to have this. And my dad would paint the fence palings all different colours. Everything was different. He loved colour. So I liked to incorporate colour. I didn't paint traditional way. I painted pictures of our house. I was so proud of us to have a house that I would paint pictures of the house as a kid, draw things. I would draw people. I would draw the garden. I would draw plants, draw insects. So growing as a kid, we had a sort of a quiet sort of connection to culture. My dad was very fearful. His younger brothers were in foster care, part of Stolen Generation. And it wasn't until I got older and I talked to my dad about why he was never there when the social worker came out. Did he not care? And he said, no, I was scared. He said, I was scared that had a fair skin, some of the disabilities, they might take you away. So I didn't want them to see that you had a black dad. And we just had this, and he died very young. He was only 59 when he died. But I think the art and the storytelling, it just had an impact on me as a kid. It was my way of doing something, expressing myself when I couldn't do sport. And you got picked on a lot back in the day as a kid with disability. You know, you went to special schools and all that kind of thing. And when I was moved into a mainstream school as part of an experiment in the mid-1960s, I hated it because suddenly I was the only disabled kid there. But it taught me a lot of skills because I learned to run away every day and I got really good wearing my leg irons with climbing trees and hiding in old building sites to get away from the prefects who were looking for me and getting home. So even that was a skill thing. But the art has progressed. And it wasn't until I was on my 50th birthday and my partner, who's a beautiful man, we've been together 27 years, and he said to me, I kept saying to him, I want to paint my dad's stories. And I didn't think I had to wait till I was old enough to have a story to tell, I felt, and to do it justice. And for my 50th birthday, he bought me a whole heap of paints, canvases, chopsticks to do dotting with, all that kind of thing. And he said, and I just unwrapped this box of all this stuff in this easel. And he said, time to stop talking about it. And for the last 15, 16 years, it's just led me on this amazing journey and introduced me to the most incredible people and just been, I don't know, an incredible experience. And every time I paint, I try to honour my father and my culture and my connection. And it's my way of showing our culture is alive and strong and our stories are still continuing.
And that's just a beautiful thing, as you've described it as well. Thank you so much for sharing such touching and personal stories from your childhood with your father, who you sadly lost at a very early age. I'm so sorry about that, Paul. We'll move on to our next question now. And, of course, you are involved with an amazing art group. I would really like you to share with us about this art group. It's called the Nunuron Art Group, and it supports other Indigenous disabled artists across the community. How does it work, Paul?
Nunuron actually comes from two of our artists who passed away. There was Nuna, who was an amazing saltwater Nunuka woman, beautiful artist, an incredible woman and dear friend, and Uncle Ron, who was this amazing Gamilaroi artist. So we lost them. And when we were planning to name the art group again and give it a formal name, we approached their families and said we'd really like to call the art group after them because they were so strong and so supportive. So that's where Nunuron comes from. And Nunuron is the two people, and what it gives us in the name is our female energy, our male energy. Nuna was salt water, Uncle Ron was fresh water. So it gives us our salt water, fresh water coming together. So the name even has the story and how it's connected. But it's made up of a group of artists, locals living up here on the sunny coast, but we have artists connected in other parts of the country as well, and a deadly artist down in New South Wales. And they're all people with a lived experience around disability and survivors. And the art group came around as a sort of a way of bringing people together in community to share stories and do it on a cultural capacity to share their stories. And young people, they're still fighting their way to help them share their stories. And we're a little group. We're not funded. We're just an independent group of artists. We beg, borrow, and steal to get what we can. But every now and again, we do get some funding for different projects. And that's how it started. It just was a need in regards to mob with disabilities looking for a way to connect that was culturally and socially appropriate for us and creating a safe space. And the art was just natural. I didn't start that. That's just how we come together, because we all painted and told stories and loved it. And we come together and we're still going. It was like 10 years ago. An amazing group of artists, and people go away for a little while then come back. But I've seen just people, the incredible strength with the artists and the resilience. And I remember our first art exhibition was quite flash. It was at the big resort up here on the sunny coast. And I remember seeing some artists that were pretty socially isolated before the group. They lived with disability or mental health issues. And to turn up on opening night, dressed up, looking so flash, so glamorous, and they're at the art exhibition. And we had waiters walking around with champagne and everything else. We wanted it to really be up there sort of stuff. And then I just sat there and observed these amazing people standing there holding court, people standing around them while they shared their story, talked about their artwork. And it was just, to me, I thought, this is what it's about. This is, here are these artists who are normally just seen as deficit in our community because they have disabilities, holding court, telling stories, and people hanging off every word because they valued what they had. And these people, these amazing guys, become teachers. And it's just progressed from there. We've done huge things. I could go on for, I love talking about our art group and the deadly stuff they do and individual stories. But yeah, we're just still going. We just still go strong. We finally got a space at Nambour. One of our artists' parents run a disability support service, and they've donated us finally a creative space. So we don't have to squish into my studio anymore. We actually have a space, and we can start inviting more people along.
And let's talk about that space. Can you describe it to us? And what is it going to look like for these amazing artists in community?
It's an organisation in Nambour called NAILS. And I'm terrible, I should know the acronym. But it's run by one of our artists who's a young man with Down syndrome. He's a beautiful artist. He's also got a black belt in karate. So, yeah, he's pretty great. And his parents are just so impressed with his art and what he's done and how it's impacted and changed his life that they run a centre in Nambour for young people with disabilities. And they run karate classes. And they have karate classes for people with disabilities alongside people without disabilities. So this real immersion. And they called me up about a month or so ago and said, oh, do you want to come up for a meeting? Want to have a yarn with you? And I went up there and they showed us this amazing space. It's this huge open area with mirrored walls, and then there's a little quiet area next to it, and then the storage area. And I said, wow, what an amazing space this is, and has access to an accessible toilets and kitchen all in this big center. And they said, we'd like to donate this to the art group to have their own creative space. And it's just this beautiful area with young people with disabilities wandering around that can come in and sit down and share stories. And in the next few weeks, we hope to get all furnished. We've got a lot of stuff in storage, and we hope to get some painting tables up there and start doing stuff with community and start getting people connected again and having this space that we can allocate and do different things.
Sounds too deadly indeed, and I'm sure there'll be lots of deadly art that's going to be produced in that very special space by the sounds of it, Paul, which is deadly indeed. Now we move to our next question, and I really want to hear about your amazing experiences as a UN delegate. How did this even happen? Can you explain to us how you found yourself in the position of a UN delegate, which is very impressive?
I've been very lucky. In 2017, an organisation I used to work for a peak body, First Peoples Disability Network Australia, and there was an inaugural conference held at the United Nations headquarters in New York under the United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disability. It was the first time they were going to have a discussion around LGBTIQ+ issues. So I was approached and asked, would you like to speak on the title was LGBTIQ+ First Nations People Living with Disability and the Intersectionality Between Those. Now, that's a mouthful to talk about at the UN. So I said, I'd love to. That would be fantastic. So I did a painting. Of course, that's the way I keep my notes. That's my PowerPoint. I did a painting that incorporated everything I wanted to talk about in the time I had. And I took that painting with me, and it was amazing to have it up on the big screen of the United Nations while I talked to my artwork. And then after the session, it was hosted by the Canadian government. So the Canadian Minister for Disabilities was so respectful. And she talks about the two-spirit concept in Canada, Indigenous people, which I called my painting was many spirits, because I have a philosophy where inside we have multiple spirits that can be different things, and that's like LGBTIQ+, but our disability is also part of our spirituality and our connection to culture and our spirituality. So within all of us, we have these many, many spirits, and that's what you have to be true to, not what's on the outside, but what is on the inside, and that could be multiples of those. So, and I just thought she was so respectful. So at the end of it, I contacted her office and offered to give her the original painting as a gift, as a new message to link our mob with the Canadian mob for the LGBTIQ+ community. And she was lovely, and she was all emotional, and she arranged a special meeting at the diplomats' lounge in the UN. My partner, who's still the same partner, but he couldn't get clearance to get into the UN. We couldn't get security in time. So she was devastated, didn't see my presentation. So she arranged for the Canadian High Commission to come down and meet him at the main entrance to the UN and escort him up to the lounge while we presented the artwork to her. And so that's where it all started. And then this year I was approached through another organisation to be an official delegate to go to the UN as an official member of the Australian Indigenous Disability Community. But out of that, I thought, which was amazing to be officially identified as a representative, but I thought, I can't be the only one. that's not right. I can't be the only one going through this. So we managed to beg, borrow and steal and approached a few different people and different organisations. And in the end, I was able to have two other artists go with me from our group to go and help one of the young fellas whose parents donated the space. They paid their own way to come and support him at the UN. And we took the artwork over. We did a presentation, an art exhibition. And the art exhibition was called Reflections of the UN CRPD. And what it is, it's 12 individual paintings, and each painting represents an article of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disability from an Indigenous person with disabilities perspective. So each painting was an artist saying, this is what this article of the UN means to me. And the paintings were amazing. And each one, we had a QR code where with your smartphone, it could take you to the artist explaining what that story was. So, and the paintings, because they're very textured, one of the things which I love to do, and it feels, I love it when it happens, was over there was a young woman from Barbados who was blind. So I was able to take her hand and show her she could feel all the symbols we use in our storytelling. And I could explain the whole story of the artwork. She could feel the artwork and the whole story of the artwork come out of that. It really, to present it at the United Nations, we got to also present at the Australian Embassy. We blew away. Got to promote our mob and our culture and our art there as well. And one of the funny things, we had some extra time allocated to us in the UN. So one of the young artists said to his dad, he's a deadly Indigenous bloke, Murray fella from up around Rocky. I said, how do you feel like speaking at the United Nations? And he goes, what? I said, you got 3 minutes. Can you put something together tomorrow to talk about your son, Jaya, and what it means to him? And he did an amazing job. And he stood up and he spoke at the United Nations for the first time. So, and it was beautiful when the artwork came up on the screen. And people come up to us later and said, that was the most engaging thing. The artwork was amazing. And it was the most beautiful way we've seen human rights explained in that way. And our theme was that we took one of the most ancient cultures, living cultures and storytelling styles, and we incorporated 21st century digital technology to create stories that our mob with disabilities can understand their rights under the United Nations. So our little group, just they're the people I'm surrounded by that paint and do these stories. So, you know, I just think I'm blessed to be part of all this. And to go there to the UN and talk our mob up and what we do, and I sit there and sort of think, you know what? I wish my dad was alive, my mum was alive, because this is a long way from that tin shack on the banks of the Lake Cove River sort of stuff. So I think I'm very, very blessed to have that opportunity to have that world platform to talk about our mob and what we do and to shine and raise the expectations of what people think about mob with disabilities and what we actually do out there.
Thank you so much, Paul, for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure having a yarn with you, hearing your amazing experiences with living with a disability and your experiences with your fellow artists from community, how you all come together and learn off each other, and then you continue to teach the wider community out there. So big well done to you for the amazing work, and may you continue to carry on and continue the wonderful community cultural work you're doing. And I wish you all the best.
Oh, my absolute pleasure, and thank you for having a chance to talk about it.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
And that was Paul Constable Calcott yarning with Kerry Lee Harding. Speak My Language Disability is an initiative funded by the Commonwealth Department of Social Services. It is led by the Ethnic Communities Council of New South Wales and proudly delivered in partnership with SBS. For more episodes of Speak My Language, follow the podcast on the SBS audio app, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.